everyone, and welcome to the Talk They Hear You podcast, What Parents Are Saying, Prevention Wisdom, Authenticity, and Empowerment. This podcast is brought to you by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, also known as SAMHSA. Talk They Hear You is a national prevention campaign that aims to help parents and caregivers talk with their kids about the dangers and risks of underage drinking and other drug use. In this podcast, we hear what's working and what isn't, and what might be missing in our efforts to help kids navigate away from alcohol and other drugs. I'm Debbie Berndt, Director of Parent Movement 2.0, and I'll be your host. As a reminder, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of SAMHSA or the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So, to celebrate the Recovery Awareness Month of September, we are going to explore parenting in recovery today. And we welcome Ben Court.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So let me give you a little background on Ben. He's been sober since 1996 and has been part of the recovery movement in almost every way imaginable, from a recipient to a provider to a spokesperson. He has a deep understanding of the issues and a personal motivation to see the harmful effects of drug and alcohol abuse minimized. Over the years, he has consulted with various treatment programs, hospitals, nonprofits, state governments, athletic and labor organizations. He is now CEO of the Foundry Steamboat Springs, which is an inpatient treatment program in Colorado for men. Ben teaches, and he is a board member for many prevention and policy organizations. He is a published author of Weed, Inc., and his TED Talk, Surprising Truths About Legalizing Cannabis, has over 4 million views. All of this notoriety and experience, yet his biggest accomplishment is being the parent of 3 awesome kids. So welcome, Ben.
Most of the time, awesome. Sometimes tolerable.
I hear ya. So we were saying earlier, we kind of travel in some of the same prevention circles and obviously have had some communication through email, but we are meeting for the first time today and on this podcast. I guess I have to laugh. People in recovery sometimes just dive in deep. So we're going to jump into a deep conversation about parenting. The episode is ultimately to explore this topic of parenting when you are in recovery. And I imagine that we are speaking to parents that are actually in recovery, but also even more generally to parents who aren't, to see if anything about our experience, you know, is useful or can be informative more generally. So let me just ask you, what are the ages of your kids?
My daughter's 18, and then I have a 17-year-old son and a 13-year-old son.
Okay, awesome. I am also in long-term recovery, and I have a 26-year-old and a 23-year-old and an 18-year-old. So I think we really cover middle and high school and college there. So do you feel like your recovery has informed your parenting, and in what kind of ways?
Well, I don't think there's really anything in my life that my recovery doesn't pretty dramatically influence. And since my parenting is, after my relationship with my wife, probably the biggest and most important thing, yeah, it absolutely influences it. And as I was thinking about this conversation, that question obviously was one that I was considering. In what ways does it inform it? And there are so many, but maybe the biggest one, if I'm going to just pick one right now, it's in the basics that we say every time we're at a meeting, that I need to make sure that I've got the ability to affect the things that I can, and then the acceptance to take the things that I cannot change, because all parents deal with those things. I just feel like we got some great tools inside of the recovery world to say, okay, yes, I have control here. I do not have control here.
That's a great point. I don't know, depending on how old one's kids are, if they understand how much parenting is about control and then giving up control and or changing your perspective on what control means. And I know that was a constant and ongoing lesson for me. I love that you applied some of the recovery tools. That serenity prayer is pretty amazing, right? Tell me how, I'm like forgetting it. I'm blanking on the serenity prayer. How does it go specifically?
Are you just testing me? Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes. So if you haven't heard that, if you're listening to us and you're not in recovery, take that with you. It's a good one. Every parent out there at some point in time is dealing with their children who may or may not want to drink and or smoke and socialize in a way that includes substances. Has that been a difficult topic for you? Has it been pretty straightforward? What do you think?
Well, in a lot of ways, because I work in the field too, not just my own personal recovery, it's been made so much easier because the kids see day in and day out what goes on. I think that if I didn't work in the field, there would sort of be that boundary that I'd try and find between how much personal disclosure versus just kind of my own recovery. What I did with my kids, because we talk about it all the time and have talked about it since they were first going off to school, and try and talk about everything with them, you know, the role that the internet and social media is going to play in their lives, pornography, substances. And the deal that we made with all of our kids at the beginning of things when they first started school was that if you go through all of school and graduate high school and have never used alcohol, tobacco, or any other substances, you get a trip anywhere in the world you want. And my daughter is the only one who's graduated, and she made it. She's never even tried tobacco. It was always something that she had to look forward to. It was always something we could talk around that was sort of strengths-based. She always came to us with the, because I made this commitment and because I want to do this, here's what's going on. Here's what I'm thinking. Can you guys help me with this? It really opened up a lot of great conversations with us.
That's a great, huge carrot to stick in front of a child.
I figured it was cheaper than treatment.
And you have 18 years to save for it.
Right.
And it's certainly cheaper than the next 60 years of pain and suffering and going through the challenges of having a kid who is using and who does end up in addiction. It sounds like she was very motivated kind of in and of herself. Anything either about some of the issues that she brought you that you would share, or did you ever find yourself reaching out to other parents, maybe that were throwing a party or whatever, to kind of say, hey, what's happening? And are you letting people drink? Did she get to go to parties? And, you know, were there parties with alcohol?
She's a COVID kid. So they were pretty reduced, you know, class of 22, they were pretty reduced. But yes, she certainly did. And, you know, I live in Colorado. So our conversations are very, very centered around THC. A lot of the times around weed. So I certainly check in quite a bit with other parents. My wife and I always ask about firearms in the house before they go over, and we don't have a problem with them. I'm a pretty avid hunter myself, but I want to make sure they're all locked up. And then we always ask about THC, about weed. If it's in the house, is it always locked up? Other than that, no, it really just came down to her being very prepared too. One of the things we did a lot with her was role play, and my son too. We would role play what would come up and how we would see it come up so that she would have the actual language for it. Because, you know, when you're in the moment, especially when you're a kid, everything kind of shuts down, you go black. So we wanted to practice all of those things before she ended up in that situation.
That is great. So the Talk the Hear You campaign is all about talking to your children early and often. It's all about having conversations. They provide a lot of different tools for those conversation starters. They recently created a mobile app that parents can use with conversation starters in it, and where parents can actually record themselves having a conversation with their kid.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, right? But I think that setting kids up with language is so important, not only because they're prepared, but if you've ever been around a 9th or 10th grader, 14 or 15 year old, it's like they revert to being pre-verbal. Language is a center that starts rewiring itself and doing different things in the brain. And so they really literally don't have the language for a lot of things, and they're listening a lot. So it sounds like it was very just instinctual for you to make sure they are equipped, but there's also this neurological underpinning of it as well that says this is a really good idea.
Well, the only reason that we thought of it, it wasn't instinctual. I mean, we certainly didn't think of the stuff on our own. It was mostly because of SAMHSA and stuff that they've published. Like, I'm really familiar with what the data says. And there's exceptions to every single rule, but the data tells us how much self-disclosure is a good idea. The data tells us how much conversation is a good idea. And anytime you're looking at big, giant numbers, you don't take into account the kid's individuality. So that's where, as a parent, if you put that in, then I think you can develop some good systems, but we knew the importance of very open and frequent conversations, that frequency is huge. We also knew the importance of not getting into specifics of my past. My wife is just an amazing human being and never, I don't think she had a sip of alcohol until she was in her mid-20s. So with how much we disclosed about my past, we also knew what the data said there, that you never want to be dishonest, but you also don't want to get into specifics.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, because that's a big conundrum, especially if you're in recovery, right?
Yeah, it can be
an issue for any family. But just tell anything else. Where did you don't have to tell us the specifics about your story unless you want to, but a little bit about where you drew the line and how you knew you were getting to the line.
Well, so there's this whole concept inside of our recovery world that talks about rigorous honesty. And it's basically the one of the best defenses that we have against using or drinking again is making sure that we stay honest. And so when your kid says, did you ever? I think that instinctually, for those of us who've been in recovery for a little while, we just want to be like, oh, yeah, for sure. And what we've got to remember is that, so like, Debbie, if you and I got together and started trading stories, we would be able to do that and probably laugh about most of them because they're so far in our past. We're in recovery. We know that that's gone. We know who we are today. Our kids don't really understand that duality. And so what they would see is, wow, dad stole cars. Wow, dad sold drugs. Wow. And so what I would say to them a lot of the times is I made a lot of decisions that I'm very not proud of, and that I wish I would have made differently. And then what we would always do, despite her discomfort with it, is we would draw back to my wife and we would say, I took the easy road. I took the big, giant, wide, do whatever feels good road. Your mom, on the other hand, stayed on the straight and narrow. Everything that she was doing, she was intentional and deliberate about. So we'd always try and kind of turn it into a strengths-based thing. And as they've gotten older, so my daughter, who's now 18 and soon 19, we do talk more specifically about some things. And my son, who's 17, he's quite a bit less mature than she is, but we do too. So I think it's making sure that you keep up with the age-appropriate side of it, that you're not going to overwhelm your kids either.
Right. And I like that idea that part of, again, we were talking before we got started about brain development in adolescence. So from 12 to 17 is focused in the limbic system. And then brain development shifts when kids turn 18. And from 18 to 25, it becomes all about the prefrontal cortex. And that prefrontal cortex is all of those higher thinking functions and executive development and right and wrong and cause and effect and self-awareness. So with that in mind, what you said about you can tell a kid a story and their ability to understand time, understand nuance, understand implications really is not necessarily there, maybe in some capacity. So being sensitive to that.
I always thought of it as a way I could respect my kids and respect their ability to process. Because the other thing, I think a lot of parents and a lot of the time, we need to engage with our kids as a way of getting validation. We also, we kind of want our kids to know, oh, that movie you're watching is nothing. You should have seen what we did back in the day. And I think it does come back to that idea of us getting validation from our kids, which is really shaky ground. That always kind of needs to go the other way. An adult looking for emotional validation from their children is probably going to end up pretty disappointed. We need to be there to validate our children. So if I needed to process those things, I wouldn't do it with the kids. I do it with my wife. I do it with my therapist. I do it in my 12-step world.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't think I realized how much growing up I was still going to be doing when I became an adult, and especially when I became a parent. It's a little bit tied to control, but it's really just kids force us to become adults and to look at ourselves and and to think about, make some of those distinctions between our own needs and where we're getting them fulfilled. That's a great way to kind of articulate that.
My father's a remarkable guy. And when I was getting married, I said, Dad, I want to talk to you about getting married. What do you think? And he's a retired Presbyterian preacher. And I've literally in my life heard him cuss three times. And I'll edit it for your viewers. But he said, when you're ready to find out what kind of a man you are, yes, get married. And he said, when you're ready to find out what kind of crap is really inside of your soul, have a kid.
I love it. It's such an opportunity to evolve. That's great. So it sounds like your kids might not need a lot of other strategy or cajoling, but do you ever use the delay kind of concept with them, or have you seen other parents use that with any success?
Yeah, for sure. And I actually use it very regularly with other people's kids.
Okay.
Because of some of the work I do, particularly around marijuana, I get a lot of calls. In fact, had an opportunity to do a follow-up call with a family just before we got on when I spoke with their son last night. And the entire idea with him was not to convince him that THC was going to be bad for him, was to convince him to delay the onset. So yes, delay. The longer we can hold off, if everybody waited till they were in their mid-20s, I wouldn't have a job and I'd be thrilled about
it. I know. I feel like a lot of medical professions, a lot of people in the world you inhabit really believe we could end adult addiction if we could get everybody to wait till their mid-20s.
What you'd end up is that small portion of people who are genetically predisposed, somewhere around 10%, and we could manage that.
Right. Talk to me about the genetic predisposition. Any thoughts in the work you do or just whatever?
Well, let's just put it very frankly, Debbie, our kids are screwed. Yes. The genetics are. I come from a very, very long line of alcoholics. My mother got sober when I was 7. My great uncle, who passed away about 5 years ago, was the first person on that side of the family anybody can remember who died sober. He had about 10 years. So genetics are a very, very real thing. I mean, we're coming to learn that about equal to genetics are trauma in our early life. So our ACE scores, adverse childhood event scores. Mm-hmm. And you are at so much more of a risk if you come from a family that has addiction and or mental illness in it.
Right.
And that's another reason I've been so careful at home with my kids, because, hey, you guys, you sort of lost the lotto here. Be aware.
Yeah. And I have found that family genetics and addiction in the family can be really difficult, right? Every family is talking about it or not to varying degrees, but we've found it's pretty prophylactic. Like if a kid can know that they come from a greater risk, they will in many cases, not every case, but in many cases kind of defend themselves or advocate for themselves when they're out there in the world. Again, not always, a fair amount of, you know, I can't, I'm at a greater risk. And lots of friends will honor that and recognize that, okay, I'm not going to throw the beer bong at Johnny over there because it's not going to be great for him.
Well, you know, it's funny, early in life, when my mom got sober and she started to explain this stuff to us and she told us about how much addiction was inside of our family, I said that. I said, I will never. And I made it all the way until 12 or 13 when I did. And then it was just this. It was the silver bullet. I mean, it fixed everything, the mental health struggles that had been there, the loneliness, the anger. So yeah, for sure. I mean, that shouldn't dissuade us from talking to them, but it doesn't always work. And if it doesn't, don't blame yourself, parents.
So is there anything that you would say to parents who do use fairly regularly and probably drink normally, but anything about modeling or experience that you've seen that's worked or not worked with other parents that you interact with?
So the data would always tell us that do as I say, not as I do is terribly ineffective. And so what we want to do, you certainly can model responsible use. If you are somebody who drinks responsibly, you certainly can model that drink with dinner. However, you want to have very specific conversations around it so that they understand that it is not for them. Any illicit substance, cannabis included, we do not ever want to do in front of our kids. Same with smoking. Even if you are a smoker, if your kids know you smoke, there's a big difference between that and them seeing you smoke. So really consider that your actions are going to be very scrutinized, whether or not you want them to be. That's one of the tough things about being a parent, is is this going to happen? So yes, don't use in front of your kids. Certainly at all costs, avoid intoxication in front of your kids.
One of the reasons I stay in prevention and continue to work in parent education is my huge fantasy would be for us as a society to move to what? Alcohol, drugs in middle school and high school? No, that's not, nobody, we don't do that. And we are very far away from that. You know, I feel like it would be so much easier to be a kid in our country and in the world if we could all kind of move to that space. But any thoughts about either accomplishing some different collective understanding about drugs and alcohol?
Well, we're certainly losing that battle, one which you described the victory in. And if we were able to do that, I mean, you look at it from every angle, the amount of money that we would save as a society would just be absolutely profound. We could tackle everything that there is to tackle out there. But I think most parents who've gone through it would say, forget the money, the amount of heartache that we could avoid would be so incredible. It's interesting, though, you have the priorities of the parents who truly want what's best for your kids versus the priorities of the industries that sell addictive substances.
I feel like the majority of parents that I work with just have no idea that this is even an issue and that this is even going on. And that's the part where I wish we were all fighting a little harder against it, I guess.
Well, we got you, Debbie.
We got you, Ben.
Never underestimate the power of one. And I think it's easy to get nihilistic and to say, well, this is it. We live in America in the 21st century. We're screwed. Yeah, but I also think that it's going to be a cold day in hell when I stop fighting for everybody's kids.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so any thoughts for parents that find their kids using? And I think when you're in recovery and you find your kid using, that's a specific kind of fear that starts. So maybe even any thoughts on that and or thoughts on if you're not in recovery?
Well, so we've got terrible sample group bias, those of us in recovery. And then add to that, at least for me, working in treatment, I don't know a lot of normal users. I mean, I certainly have some friends. I mean, my wife is normal. But for the most part, I see what happens on the back end. I see the devastation. So I know for sure that my tendency is to prescribe my own worst case scenario onto other people. And to think, well, this is what it was like for me, and this was what it got me, because it was pretty dark. You know, none of us who are in recovery got here because it was awesome. It got pretty dark. So I think one of the most important things I can tell you is let your experience inform and be a guide, but don't assume that your kids are going to reenact your life. I think that's probably pretty important. And while I haven't dealt with substance abuse, we've dealt with plenty of tough kids stuff, very tough kids stuff. And I will tell you that absolutely maintaining your own north is crucial. Like, the first thing I want to do when stuff goes wrong at home is to yell and get angry. And then, you know, the default in my brain kicks in. Well, this would be so much easier if you were drunk or high. And the discipline says, no, get up and go to a meeting, man. You need to walk away from this situation. You need to call a sponsor. You need to call another buddy in the program. You need to get to a meeting. So whatever you end up doing, whatever your kids throw at you, make sure that you keep your own recovery first. You know, on the back of our coins, they used to always print it, and now it's there on some of them. It says, to thine own self be true. And I don't think that's a selfish thing. That's a, I am a better husband. I am a better father when I'm true to myself and keeping my recovery central.
I love it. I think we should end on that note. This is really an important topic. It's a lot of really great insights that you offered today, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks. Thanks for doing what you do.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And hopefully we can have you back on the program in the future. And it sounds like there's, like I said, about a million things we could talk about.
Goodness, yeah. Let's talk weed sometime.
Let's talk weed sometime. That sounds great. You're in the epicenter of it all.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this valuable information and for your very unique and valued perspective. We want to remind listeners that all Talk They Hear You materials, including this podcast, can be found at the Talk They Hear You website. That is Talk They Hear You, all spelled out, no spaces, .samhsa.gov. SAMHSA is SAMHSA. Please share this site and this podcast with your friends. The more we can be in conversation with each other, the better for everyone, especially our kids. Lastly, we would like to hear from you. Would you like to be on our show? Do you have stories to share or tips or techniques that have worked or not worked for you as a parent? Do you have questions for us or any feedback for topics or improvements of any kind? We know that your input will help us design the most useful interviews possible. For any of this, please contact us at whatparentsaresaying@gmail.com. Again, all spelled out, whatparentsaresaying@gmail.com. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.